Good morning, Greater New Bedford. Beautiful day out there. Really picturesque. I mean, it's cold, but it's December. And nice sun out. Really nice. If you haven't been outside yet, you will find it to be cold, but it is a beautiful day. We're going to have a very busy show today. Very busy. We're going to start the program off talking about a trial that's gripping the entire nation. It's being covered on the big national news programs. Cable news is covering it. The Brian Walsh trial, the murder trial up in Cohasset. And as we've been doing with a lot of these trials around Massachusetts that are making news that we have to understand. And most of us are not attorneys. Most of us have never been prosecutors. Most of us have never been defendants either. So I have Representative Chris Markey here, former prosecutor in Bristol County, currently a defense attorney. And I think he can give us the play-by-play or try to figure out what's happening in this trial and why it's going this way. Good morning, Chris. How
are
you doing?
Good. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well.
Good.
So it's day two. We're going into day three, right?
Day six or seven.
Is that what it is?
Eight? Yeah.
I guess it's week two. So yesterday I'm watching the news, and it's all over the news, the Brian Walsh trial. Why is the prosecution playing these videos of him going around Home Depot and Lowe's? Well, what's the purpose of that?
Well, from what I gather from the opening statement of the defense attorney, where he said, oh, Brian panicked and was all upset, didn't know what to do and all this stuff. I think the idea is to show that he's pretty calm going through. He's even got a kid with him, one of the kids. And he's covering up his face. He's got gloves on. Maybe that's to hide some injuries.
Okay.
Also, I think that it just shows the deliberateness of his efforts to hide the body.
Yes.
You know, you got to think about it is, here's a guy who's got a pair of sneakers on. He's got to bend over, tie him up, get ready, put a coat on, put the mask on, put the gloves on, get changed like a normal person every day. And he was doing all that with the sole intention of going to Lowe's to get items to clean up what he had done. He went to CVS, I think, to get other hydrogen peroxide, I think. So it just shows the efforts that he did that are consistent with the Google searches he had that were testified to last week, where he didn't Google how to just dispose of a body, but how to dispose of a body after a murder.
Right.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yes.
Right? And then the pieces of her body that are found in different locations and items that are found, and the idea that there's certain items that are discovered with her blood on it miles and, 30, 50 miles away.
Right.
That's real troubling.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, I think the idea is to show
the methodical.
This is not a guy who is in a panic mode and all of that. I mean, I thought the defense with this compelling Google search stuff, they tried to say, well, all those searches were after the death. There wasn't anything like, how do I kill my wife? There wasn't any of that.
Okay.
So maybe that's what they're going to try to say, is that there wasn't premeditated.
All right.
But, I mean, that's, again, grasping at the last straw that's out there. I don't think it's very credible.
We're speaking with Attorney Chris Markey. Of course, he was a prosecutor in the Bristol County District Attorney's Office for a number of years, did murder trial. And we're asking about the Brian Walsh trial. Chris, I think you've told us you believe he has to take the stand, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just from the opening statements, again, you have to have a reasonable likelihood that what you say in an opening statement is going to be testified to or put into evidence. The idea of the very intimate moments of that death. Someone has to describe the fact that he went to bed and he nudged her and pushed her out onto the floor.
Right.
Like, someone has to testify to that, and the only person who can testify to that is him. There's no one else. So I don't know how they could get that in without it. Again, if they don't prove it, you know, the Commonwealth can go back and basically say, you know, what we've proven, and it was not anything else other than this is the only evidence, and you can highlight the fact that it's not evidence.
It is going to be, I mean, I think it's, I hate to say you look forward to something in a murder trial, obviously, but to see this buffoon, in my opinion, get up and have to explain, you know, that, oh, she just happened to be dead. You know, oh, she was just dead. How does he, all right, from the prosecution side, Chris, what are you anticipating the defense is trying to do here?
Well, just, I think there were some Google searches previous that also talked about what states are the best to be divorced in as a man.
Okay.
Things like that. So, you know, there is that can show motive. I think that the Google search of the murder thing after you, you know, how do you dispose of a body? Then it's not like, you know, he kept her body in one piece, you know, like, no. Okay, and disposed of her and buried her on the side of the highway or went in the woods and buried her or put her in even a box of any type or right. Anything like that. I mean, this is pretty gruesome.
He desecrated her body.
And the idea that he is that...
Allegedly.
One would think, which would be, if one were to be in a panic, in a psychotic state because their loved one died, mm-hmm. He's pretty darn calm at Lowe's, standing there when the guy's checking out his 7 buckets and his cleaning materials and his bleach and all of that. I mean, that's kind of tough to overcome. And so it's just, but then, you know, the purchase of a hatchet and a saw and all this other stuff, you're like, that guy who was in those pictures and those videos did not seem like he was in a psychotic state or a manic state or panicked or anything like that. He was looking to kind of go in unassuming, hide his identity and move on and make sure that, and again, he paid in cash.
Right.
You know, all those things that are indicative of someone trying to hide something.
Conscious of guilt, right?
Yeah. So that's, I think that that's just overwhelming evidence, even without a body.
My theory of this case, and for whatever it's worth, is that he's going to have to say she was maybe taking drugs, something like that. She overdosed. And he didn't know what to do, and he didn't want his kids to find, or didn't want the police to find the narcotics. So he got rid of the narcotics and chopped up her body. That's the only story I think could even what do you think?
I think the fact that you thought that through is pretty disturbing to everybody, and everyone should be concerned about what your history. I think it's... It is.
I mean, how else do you explain a dead body at her age, you know?
No, I agree. And the unexplained, I don't think the drug thing is going to work because that would have come out in the opening. And then in addition to that, he wouldn't have highlighted this sudden unexplained death as being the reason he died. She died.
In other words, it would have already come out?
Yeah, well, he would have laid the groundwork for that.
Okay.
His position is it's an unexplained sudden death. And, I think most people could have a field day with this guy on cross-examination.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Because it's just so many things. He's the son of a doctor.
Yeah.
Clearly intelligent, college and all that. But you'd think, you know, well, the only way it's unexplained is by not doing an autopsy.
Right.
Right? I mean...
Yes.
We would have been able to explain that it's unexplained, but it's
you
not
chopped
available.
The body up.
Yeah. So, and it's, again, it's not, even if she had her remains buried somewhere in the woods or even put in the ocean or in a lake or whatever, you would have had the remains to figure out something. He was really trying to hide as much as he possibly could by distributing her, the remains of her body in different locations.
I don't often quote movies, but all I keep thinking of when they were showing the hatchet and the hacksaw. I was thinking of Donnie Brasco when they're chopping up the bodies of the three gangsters they kill in the basement, and the guy has red boots on, and they're sawing through the leather boots, and with a hacksaw. And that's all I can think of when I saw the hacksaw. And I don't often reference movies, but I have no experience chopping up bodies. So the only thing I can think of, and I don't think most people in the audience, I hope, don't have that experience either. So really, you just got to go to movies. And there's a couple other movies where Sopranos, they do some of that
stuff.
Scarface. Oh, yeah.
That was gruesome.
Yeah. Yeah. The chainsaw to the side of the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, 508-996-0500. What other defenses do you think Brian Walsh's lawyer explored?
I think he's exploring the idea of this isn't a premeditated homicide. And he's trying to say that by saying, well, he did all these crazy searches after the fact. Why wouldn't he just do them before the fact if that's what he intended to do?
Okay.
So I think that's his basis for it. And again, I think he's what he has for evidence, he's done a very good job with.
Okay.
And I think that's what he'd have to focus on. And he can just say, look, this is a guy who's exposing himself with all these Google searches, yet he didn't do any of that stuff beforehand. So maybe it's not a first-degree murder. Right? Maybe if you believe everything else,
okay,
maybe it's not. It was a crime of passion, and it's only a manslaughter. I don't know. But
he's got a lot of work to do, that poor defense attorney.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yes and no. Yes, because a lot of it has been admitted to. So you don't have to. It's not going to be, again, like that Karen Reed case where everything is challenged all the time. He's doing it more like a sniper approach and saying, these are the five things that I need to get out of the 6 or 10 witnesses that I'm really concerned with. And he's got that out of the Google search guy to say this is the seed I can plant for purposes of proving that it wasn't a premeditated murder.
We have attorney Chris Markey here in the studio talking about the Brian Walsh trial that's gripping the nation, really. I think ultimately he's going to be found guilty. Of course, he's innocent right now until he's found guilty. What's amazing to me is how overwhelming the evidence is.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't do anything anymore.
Well, the idea, technology has
right.
made it really difficult for people to get away with serious crimes. Because once you put the resources into it, the phone is, kind of like everyone's wallet now, but not only is it your wallet, but it tells you where you were, what time you were. Could tell you how fast your heart was beating at
right.
the time of the murder, right? I mean, that's how some of these technologies are. So that's one thing. And then we have video cameras everywhere. And the video cameras now are of high quality.
Yes.
Like super high quality. I remember one of the last murders that when I was in the DA's office, that's 20 years ago, it was a homicide that happened on Route 18. It was a drive-by. But I remember saying, hey, we got to go back down Route 18 on the east side going northbound and just check on all those businesses from Serta Bus all the way up to what used to be a restaurant there, the Royal Cafe, I think,
sure.
which
yep.
is now the Port Authority. But I remember going, if we only had cameras along, we had one grainy camera from Serta, and that was it. Because we wanted to show what cars could have been and where he was coming from exactly. But those things now are everywhere.
Yes.
I mean, it's not unusual to... I mean, I think when the police go and do a canvas, they're looking for Ring cameras first.
Yes.
Then they'll talk to the people, which makes sense. But, home security systems, Ring cameras, cameras in stores, streetlight cameras, all that stuff is very helpful to the prosecution.
I remember when they were arraigning Aaron Hernandez on the Bristol County murder. I happened to be with Chief Mike Myers of Fairhaven at the time, and he hadn't retired yet. And he was saying to me, see, you really, you know, you can't do anything in the sense that they pin you down with those phones and everything. And he was comparing it to Whitey Bulger, the way Whitey Bulger was able to get away with all kinds of stuff in the 70s and 80s, even the 90s, because we didn't have this kind of technology.
Yeah. I mean, the technology has assisted in so many different ways. And then also the medical technology. I mean, you also got to look at it this way, too, is how many people survive what they wouldn't have survived 25 years ago? I mean, these shootings are serious stuff, right?
Yes. And
they happen quite often. But we have great medical. We have a trauma center now in New Bedford. They're actually saving lives of people who, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, probably could have died.
Right.
So all of these things are making it a little bit different.
We've got Chris Markey here in the studio. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back. If you want to ask him a question about the Wall Street or anything else, it's 508-996-0. Stick around. We'll be right back.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Welcome back to the program. You know, I understand upgrading your home's energy efficiency can really feel overwhelming, but with C2S Energy, you don't have to go it alone. Their certified experts handle everything from assessing your home to recommending the right solutions, whether it's insulation, windows, roofing, or high efficiency heat pumps. They will even navigate the rebate process for you, making it simple to qualify for savings up to $16,000. Trust the team that knows the programs, the products, and how to maximize your comfort and savings. Visit C2SEnergy.com and let C2S Energy do the heavy lifting. We have Chris Markey here in the studio with us, talking about the Brian Walsh trial. And how much further, Chris, do you think, how much longer do you think this trial will take before we get to the main show, which is Brian Walsh trying to explain his actions?
I would assume that he would be testifying next week.
Next week. I mean, that is, I think it's going to be riveting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those, it's like, what's the line about watching a car crash? You don't want to watch it, but you don't want to turn away.
Right.
That's probably what it would be like.
Because he thinks he's a lot smarter than he really is. I would think that's a lot of people who are defendants in that position, right?
Well, I'm sure he's more desperate than he is anything else.
Right.
Yeah.
But like everybody knows, I would think that every retail establishment, like a Home Depot, a Lowe's, has cameras. And that the police are going to go looking around to the area Home Depots.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's the resources available now and having. Like, you think if they didn't have cameras, some clerk is going to be able to identify the guy?
No. And not only that, he wouldn't make a good witness, right?
Yeah. So it would be, it's the cameras that corroborate it. And, but if they didn't have that technology, they couldn't really pull it off.
It's a fascinating case because she's a good-looking girl, was having an affair apparently on her husband. Not that that's, you know, worthy of the death penalty, alleged. Do you think the jury, and does it matter if they believe the sudden death story?
I think it's a tough thing to believe.
Right.
Right. Like, I don't know. He's going to have to ask, they're going to be asked about, like, did you try CPR? How long were you downstairs for? Like, he's got to be able to explain away, was the body cold? I mean, all these things that, I mean, and then there'll be experts who will say, well, he was only down there for 20 minutes extra, came back up. Her body wouldn't be cold, would be in this position, this condition, or whatever it is. So the physiological sides of those things will be explained, and will they be consistent with his observations? And I'm sure he's going to be able to try to pull that off because he's probably researched it and all that now. But the reality is, if that's the case, why didn't he do other things?
Right. As a prosecutor, Chris, what would you try to get? Because you're going to get an opportunity to cross-examine him. We believe that. What would you try to get him into talking about?
I guess what I would start with is really about the hatchet, about the hacksaw, and make him feel really uncomfortable from the get-go. And then talk about what was he thinking on the drive up to Revere or to Everett, where he was dumping the bar, or Swampscott, or wherever he was going. What'd you do when you get out of the car? Like, how did you grab the bag? What did you grab? What was in that bag? And make him go through all that. Like, how did you put that into the bag? Where did you put it into the bag? And make him feel uncomfortable and relive it. And then you go back to that night of the actual murder on, what was it, New Year's Eve. I mean, who spends New Year's Day going around taking, you know, getting tools so that you can dismember the body of your wife?
Right.
Right?
Even if she was cheating.
You know. I mean, that's the end of that's the closing argument is Happy New Year, right?
Right.
Like, who in their right mind would be in that position?
Right. And showing the video of him really calm and methodical.
Yeah. So, like, as the Rose Bowl is going on, he's out doing this.
Right.
You know, yeah.
We are, most people in society are good, obviously. But we have real evil people among us. We do. I mean, this guy, again, everybody's innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, but it's, he might, he, I mean, the guy's a fraudster apparently too. You know what I mean? So like we all encounter those people in our lives.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. The thing that would be interesting is to know really what caused her death. And then you could say that he's true evil or not. I mean, here's a guy who he probably panicked after he killed her and realized, oh my God, what do I do? How do I get away with this? I got two kids. I want to do this. I'm going to play this role now. As pathetic as it is.
Right.
He's trying to do that. Who knows? But he, so I look at it as more of spending my time, if I was the prosecutor, on his deliberate nature of getting all the tools, deliberate nature of distributing her in different locations, taking personal items and hiding them into dumpsters, going to places that are closed, liquor stores closed on New Year's Day.
Okay.
Like, so all with the intent to really try to hide beyond what would be normal. So I'd focus on that. If I was the defense attorney, I'd just try to focus on the relationship they had and what was going on and those types of things, how the dinner was the night before, and then talk about his state of mind when he didn't know what to do. He didn't want to, you know, whatever it was. I mean, I couldn't imagine what he's going to have for those answers. But I'm sure they've gone over it 10 times to Tuesday, you know, it's figuring it out.
Let me ask you a question, Chris Markey. The guy gets on the stand, Brian Walsh, gets into the cross-examination. It's going to get heavy. It's going to get heavy. Can you just say, I don't want to do this anymore?
No.
I mean,
I guess you could.
Right.
But then you could strike all of his testimony, even his direct examination. But I don't see that happening. I just see him. He'll stop crying.
Yes.
He'll do all these things. And at the end of the day, you know, you just circle back to really is, you know, how was your wife laying when you cut her right arm off? How was, right. You know, and then make him relive it. Even if he's, I don't think he'll ever come across as sympathetic because you just bring that back.
Right. Right. We have Chris Markey here in studio. So, Chris, from a DA's perspective, and I've asked you about this before, but I think it's important. How do you select the assistant district attorney to be the prosecutor in a case like this? What do you look for?
No, I think one who can make it into sticking with the facts and organizing it in a fashion that tells a story.
Okay.
You don't necessarily want it to be in chronological order. You want it to be in a way in which the jury will be really interested in it from the get-go. And, of course, there's always witnesses that are not that important, but you need to put in. And you try to hide those as much as you can. You schedule it so that, okay, well, you know, Tuesday afternoon or whatever, Wednesday afternoon after lunch, I'm going to throw this guy on because I just got to get this evidence in.
Okay.
And I don't really need him for anything else. And jurors, it's middle of the week. Probably the courtroom's way too hot, right? You know, like it's an old courtroom.
Right.
They're going to fall asleep and you try to keep them awake that way and then try to always end on a high note at the end of every day and start with someone positive for your case every morning. So you try to have someone who's thoughtful in organizing it in that fashion.
Because there are children involved, we're not going to see them, obviously. And because the husband is the defendant, and I think her family is from overseas, we're not really seeing them. But if they were, you know, here and all that, the real victims, right, the family, how does a DA's office deal with the family members of a murder victim? And that's got to be really important, right?
I think it's always important to have your first contact. I remember my old boss, there was a movie in the 1990s called The Doctor, and it was William Hurt, and he was kind of a pretentious, arrogant doctor, surgeon, and had horrible bedside manner. And then he got sick, and he was treated that way. And he realized how poorly he'd been treating everybody.
Right.
So, like, I think of when you go to an emergency room or you go to anywhere, something like that, where it's maybe your worst day of your life. And you want people who are real professional, mm-hmm. empathetic, understanding, making sure that the details are taken care of, the small little things, that making sure they have a place to sit in the courtroom, making sure that there's a place for them to feel comfortable when court's in recess. Making sure that they have the resources that are available. There's lots of counseling. Also, a lot of people take this horrible circumstance in their life and find new energy in it,
okay.
and try to find purpose in their life. And so there's lots of organizations that they can volunteer at. They can help people who have suffered the same loss. So those support group type things, make sure that they're available as well. But really just try to have people who are very comforting to all of them and understanding it, and also like seeing a problem before it happens and making sure that problem doesn't happen. And you see that, I always say, like, nurses, I think, are the best example of those types of professions. I think, sure. victim witness people can be the same way, where they can see a patient that they know is struggling with something, they can make sure that there's some comfort there. They can, yeah. go back to the doctor and say, this guy needs pain meds, or this guy needs this, or the PT's not working, and these are the reasons why. You want to make sure you have that type of quality people.
So you think the victim witness people are almost like nurses?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good, I mean, I've never really been a victim of a crime, not that I recall. But I can imagine, particularly one of these situations where a husband's on trial for murdering his wife. So you've got both the defendant's family is also the victim's family.
Yeah, but...
That could be very messy, I would assume.
Yeah,
would
but think. What, think about this as well. And this is a rarity type homicide.
Okay.
Over the course of like a year, most homicides are people know each other and hate each other and they're gang affiliated or they're whatever. So the treatment of those people, it's still somewhat the same, but you also have to worry about safety, right? Like this case is not one that you need to worry about safety of the victim's family or anything, but, or the defendant's family, right? I mean, there's a lot of retaliations that are that end up in murder. So you got people from like, you know, the different spots in New Bedford, for example.
Okay.
They don't like each other. Now they're all in the courtroom together. Right?
Right.
So now you got to like, what's going on? How are we going to handle this? What's going to happen? So you want to make sure you're aware of all of those things. So those are all the little things that go into these cases that you want to make sure are buttoned up right before the case starts.
In the case of Brian Walsh's children, what is happening for them in the district, from the district attorney's office, the victim witness? These kids are obviously victims, and they're very young. How does that work when there are children involved?
I think they're very young.
Yes.
So I'm sure like the family is more, there's probably people who are caring for them and doing everything.
We know the two main caregivers are out of the picture.
Yeah.
Mom's dead and dad's locked up.
Yeah. But no, I'm sure there's people who have stepped up in their world and have taken care of them and done that. And they're probably, maybe they're not even in the state right now and trying to avoid all this stuff and not around. And I'm sure the school systems, wherever they are taking care of them and making sure that they're comforted in some fashion. And so there's always support for all of that stuff.
So, yes, but in other words, when there's not, is there money available through the district attorney's office to help in situations like this?
There's an organization called I think it's MOVA, which is all about finding support and monetary. If there's any issues with money, that they would be able to support them in some fashion. But again, I mean, I assume that these children, the mom probably had life insurance, the father probably, you know, has life insurance as well somewhere or whatever, however that was. They own a property. Is someone who's, they probably created a trust in there for them, their benefit.
Okay.
All types of stuff. And I'm sure there were people from the company in Washington, the real estate company, that ponied up some money and made sure that the kids were taken care of and have a trust created for them.
This is an affluent part of the state, but there are parts of the state that aren't so affluent, right? We live in one of them. And where there are victims of crime who don't have resources.
Yeah, that is true, and that's what MOVA will do, is they can help them find, you know, even the cost for a funeral or anything, all those things.
Yeah, because those are pretty expensive these days. I know I'm planning one right now. 508-996-05. We got some people on hold, Chris, but I do have to take a break, and we'll be right back. We have Chris Markey here in the studio, defense attorney, former prosecutor, talking about the Brian Walsh case. If you want to get involved, you can. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Could never die, but that'd change if she ever found out about you or not.
Welcome. Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. We have Representative Chris Markey here in the studio talking about the Brian Walsh trial. But Chris, I do want to talk to you about put that guy on hold. All right, we'll take this call and then we'll come back to what I wanted to ask about. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Morning, Chris. How you doing today?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Hey, I just have one question because I haven't been following this that closely. But where were the children when this happened, when he supposedly killed her and dismembered her? I haven't heard anything about or remember hearing about it.
I don't think they were in the house.
No.
I'm pretty certain they weren't. They were not in the house.
Now, Chris,
they might have been visiting family.
How do you shield the children, the victims in this case? One parent is in jail. The other's been murdered. We believe. Are there resources at the state level? Hopefully, you'd like other relatives to take them. That would make them more comfortable. But are there resources available through the victim witness program for stuff like this? Thanks for the call, sir.
Yeah, at the state level, there is. I'm trying to think what MOVA stands for, but yeah, there's available. This is not one of those cases where I'm sure people came in and have taken care of them, provided them the supports they need, the counseling that they need, and all of that. I'm pretty certain of that.
Chris, the other thing going on in the state, and you stepped up with some legislation, these street takeovers. Mm-hmm. These are really outrageous. I mean, as an average person who's out there in a car on a daily basis, you don't want to be involved in this. You're just minding your own business, these straight takeovers. Well, what's happening with that?
Well, I would say that it's become the new crime for people. Remember how they, like, for a long time, the smash and grabs were a big thing for groups of kids to come and do. And then a bunch of little different things. This is one of those. And I figure that the tool or the instrumentality of their criminal behavior is their vehicle, mm-hmm. whether it be an ATV, a motocross bike, or a souped-up car. So if we added on a couple of elements to say that they were working in tandem with another group of people, and also that if they were going to hinder traffic, that they could have their vehicles seized and forfeited like we do with individuals who are drug trafficking and use their vehicles in the trafficking and seize those and forfeit those. There's all types of due process requirements of it.
Okay.
You know, they'd have to...
As they should be.
Commonwealth, yeah, the Commonwealth would have to file a petition. They would have to prove by a preponderance or clear and convincing evidence that the vehicle was used in that manner. And I just think it makes sense. And their hope is they'd never have to use it,
right.
But it's a deterrence for all of this behavior, and that's really what I'm hoping for. There's another part of the bill that deals with disorderly persons and disturbing the peace while masked. Right now, if you have a first offense disorderly person, it's a $150 fine. So if you walk out of a bar and you're screaming and yelling and the police come and you're still screaming and yelling, you're going to get a $150 fine, which is normal.
Okay.
I don't think anyone, but for a first offense while masked, there's no, I think we need to create that as a crime and then say it's a potential jail sentence. Because if you're in the middle of this stuff, egging people on and trying to hide your identity, making it more difficult for the police to identify you.
Right.
There's more culpability, and with that more culpability should come a more significant sentence.
And I think, Chris, you're right that these young guys, although other thing shocked me is how many women are now involved in this. They're young, but there's still women involved in this type of crime. And take a couple of their vehicles, and word spreads quickly, right?
I think it's cut down in Connecticut. They've done something similar.
Yeah, the kid comes to Massachusetts to do it now.
Yeah.
That's what exactly. I noticed.
They have. They come from New York, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. And I think if we do this, it can help deter that and people won't want to come.
Take a break and then we'll be back. More with our Representative Markey when we come back. Stick around. Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. We're finishing up here with Representative Chris Markey, talking about the Brian Walsh trial. And again, you're telling us, Chris, and we're taking, bringing you in as an expert here, as a prosecutor and a defense attorney. He's going to take the stand. Oh, Brian Walsh is going to take the stand.
I'm pretty certain that he has to. I mean, unless they just don't. I don't see any other mechanism for him, the evidence to come in.
This is going to be, I think it's going to be epic. I really do. I don't see how, when they play those videos. I mean, that's why I'm paying attention to this case, because obviously he's, in my opinion, he's guilty. I just want to see how he handles himself on the stand, and it's going to be epic.
Yeah, I think that it will be really interesting to see how well organized kind of the direct examination of him is and what they focus on, and then also the cross-examination.
Yeah, that's
what I assume he'd be the last witness on the, unless they have, they may want to have somebody else just
after him.
Yeah, just someone who will try to make him look more human. Maybe that's the thing. I don't know who it would be. I don't know enough about the case in that respect, like if there's somebody else out there.
Chris, I really appreciate you making yourself available to us. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad I was able to kill an hour for you.
Get out of here. So, folks, we got a busy day. We're going to have Tim White from WPRI coming up. We'll have Mike Keneally coming.